introduction. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Qing, and I'm from University of Delaware. And I would like to start my presentation with a little bit on background information. So now in Dimaver, we are now facing very serious concern for non-point phosphorus pollution, which is related to over-intense chicken industry. It is estimated that about 500 million broilers were produced every year on Dimaver, and that generates about 0.85 million tons of manure. And in the past, this huge amount of manure has been applied to over local agricultural lands as a source of fertilizers. And when farmers apply this manure, they used to apply it based on the nitrogen need of the plants. But manure are relatively richer in phosphorus. So this kind of application will over-fertilize the soil with phosphorus, and continues doing so, we will very likely gonna build up the soil phosphorus pool over the time. And now, in a lot of Dimaver soils, we have really high phosphorus concentration in excessive range, and now those soils are known as legacy phosphorus soil. Those high phosphorus legacy soil have increased risk for dissolved phosphorus losses, and once this agricultural phosphorus losses enter into sensitive water bodies such as Chesapeake Bay, they can contribute to water quality degradation, which is a process known as eutrophication. So because of this issue, a lot of people have proposed different best management practice, BMP, to address the phosphorus losses from soil to waterway. And here are just a few examples. Some people have proposed that we should switch over tillage system to conservation or periodic tillage so that we can minimize over disturbance on the soil surface and control the erosion and particularly peat losses. However, this strategy will not solve the issue that phosphorus being building up on the soil surface, and at soil with very high concentration, dissolved phosphorus can still be released from legacy sites. And other people have proposed that we can just totally ban the phosphorus input in areas with really high phosphorus concentration. But in areas like Dimaver, we have really concentrated animal production. And if we totally ban the phosphorus input as manure, we're going to have new issues about what we can do to dispose this manure and waste. And previous study has also shown that even though we totally ban the phosphorus input, it can take decades or even longer to draw down the phosphorus level to be in an agronomically optimal range. So those traditional BMP are not quite effective at controlling the dissolved phosphorus losses, especially from legacy phosphorus sites. Instead, filtration structure are one of the few BMP that works pretty well in addressing this issue. And these are two pictures showing filtration structure at field sites. And the idea behind this is that we can build a below ground structure and we can fill it with phosphorus soluble materials, and they are normally coming from industry byproducts, and they are normally high in either iron, aluminum, or calcium that combine and soak with phosphorus. And we can channel through the water to flow through this filtration structure. And once the water is passing through those filtration structure, the dissolved phosphorus can be bind and soaked by the materials, so we can have cleaner water coming out with fewer phosphorus concentration. So this has proved to be quite effective at addressing the dissolved phosphorus from legacy phosphorus sites. But unfortunately, we are still lacking the information about what are the phosphorus remover mechanisms for those different PSMs, or in other words, what are the phosphorus species that are formed when the dissolved phosphorus are reacting with those materials. And that information are quite important because we need that to decide which PSM is the most appropriate for different filtration structure. And also, those materials will eventually become saturated with phosphorus. So knowing the phosphorus speciation information can guide us on determining the disposal strategies for those spent materials. So overall research goal is to determine the mechanism of phosphorus remover by phosphorus soluble materials used in stormwater phosphorus filtration structure using the X-ray absorbance near edge structure, which is short as ZINS. And this is one of the best in situ methods that allow us to probe the molecular information of phosphorus species in a mixed samples. So we can identify amorphous phosphorus, crystalline phosphorus, inorganic or organic P, as long as we have a really good standard library. So this picture shows the example of over PSM, and they are coming from different industry byproducts. And when we got it, they are raw materials that are not loaded with phosphorus yet. And the way I load them with phosphorus is I weigh 2 grains of materials in this centrifuge tube here, and I allow them to react with 5 ppm phosphor standard in this end-over shaker for 30 minutes. And after 30 minutes, I'm centrifuging the tube and filter out the solution for phosphor analysis, and that can help me to determine how much phosphorus has been solved by the materials. And I'm going to repeat this process until the accumulative phosphor loading is higher than 30 millimole per kilogram of materials. And I evaluated a lot of PSM, but for this presentation, I'm only going to show you 3 examples. So the first material is AMDR3, which is the acid mounting drainage residues. And the second material is aluminum WTR1, which is one of our water treatment residues. And the third material is fly ash, which is the ash materials coming from coal-fired power plant. So this table shows some selective properties of these different materials. As you can see, the pH increased from AMDR3 to fly ash dramatically. And those materials also vary a lot in terms of elementary composition. So AMDR3 has the highest total iron content, and aluminum WTR1 has the highest aluminum content, and the fly ash material has the highest calcium content. And we also identified different crystalline minerals for those materials using XRD. So for AMDR3, we find goethite, and for the rest of the two materials, we find quartz. And once I load this material with phosphorus, I took them to the advanced photo source in Argonne National Lab, and we collected the spectra from the beamline section 9 from the energy range of 2120 to 2800 eV using silicon 111 and 222 double crystal molochromator. And for all of our PSM samples, we collected the spectra in fluorescence mode. But for the phosphor standards, because they have relatively high concentration, and the previous study have shown that when we collect spectra from high phosphorus samples using fluorescence mode, we can suffer from a self-absorbing effect where the major peak of the phosphorus shrink. So that's why for all the phosphorus standards, we collected in the total electro yield mode to minimize that effect. And here are all the spectra of our standards. So we collected altogether 19 standards, including different iron, aluminum, and calcium-associated phosphate, and also one organic phosphorus species that is phytic acid. And then the diagonist feature of these different phosphorus species will allow us to differentiate the phosphorus species in a mixed samples. Specifically, iron and aluminum phosphate had this pre-etched feature before the major peak of phosphorus, which is at 2149 eV. And then calcium-associated phosphate has the shoulder feature here at the higher energy range. And this pre-etch and shoulder feature is more obvious with increasing crystallinity of phosphorus species. And once we have the spectra of the standard, we fitted them with the spectra of a sample using the linear combination fitting tool in Athena. And here is a screenshot of this LCF tool. So we fitted the spectra from the energy range minus 5 to 50 eV related to the major peak. And we are checking all the boxes here so that we can fit in a fit either mode, in which case the software will force the spectra of the standard to be aligned with the spectra of the sample. And we allow it to flow up to 1 eV. And when we do the fitting, the result will be something like this with different components and their relative weighting here. And that's going to generate 2 parameters, that is R factor and chi-square. And we want this parameter to be the lower, the better. And the way I have been doing the fitting is I fit all the spectra of standards together. And then I'm going to drop in the standards that are coming out with 0 weighting or weighting less than 10%, which is the detection limit of LCF. So in the end, you will be seeing something like this with a few standard labs. We allow up to 6 standards, and their weighting are all higher than 10%. So here is our results. In this figure, we have the energy in the x-axis, and the y-axis is normalized absorbance. And this red line is the fitting spectra, and this dark blue line behind this is over sample spectra. And those lower spectra is the identified standards. For this material specifically, AMDR3, we identified 3 components, so about 20% of phosphorus solved to ferrihydrite. and about 15% of phosphorus precipitated as iron phosphate in a semi-crystalline state, and about 67% of phosphorus solved to aluminum hydroxide. So for this material specifically, the major phosphorus removal mechanism is based on iron and alumina, and that is kind of consistent with the fact that this material has the lowest pH, so iron and aluminum-associated phosphate is the most stable at that pH. And for the aluminum WTR1, we identified four components, and they are all aluminum-associated phosphate. So about 25% precipitated as wavelength, and then 12% is phosphorus solved to aluminum hydroxide, and the majority of the phosphate precipitated with aluminum in a semi-crystalline state. So similar to what we have with the previous materials, aluminum WTR1, the major phosphorus removal mechanism is based on alumina, and that is consistent with the fact that this material has the highest total alumina content. And for the last material, fly ash, we identified three components, about 66% precipitated as hydroxyapatite, and 19% precipitated as fluoroapatite, and about 14% is phosphorus solved to aluminum hydroxide. So kind of different from the previous two materials, fly ash majorly remove phosphorus based on calcium precipitate, and that is consistent with the fact that this material has the highest calcium content as well as the highest pH. So to summarize what we find, we believe that the phosphorus removal mechanism for this PSM was majorly determined by the composition of the major solving element, and some of the reactive PSM, we believe they can be potentially used as a fertilizers. So the materials dominated by calcium and magnesium minerals could be slowly soluble in acid soils, while the aluminum and iron dominated materials would be remain somewhat stable at that pH. So with that, I would like to thank you, the Bean scientists at the Argonne National Lab and over research crew at University of Delaware. And thank you for your attention. I would like to take any questions. Can you say it again? Sorry. For this one. Yeah, so for this material, we have higher total iron content, but my thinking behind this is that total iron content is not the same as available or amorphous more soluble iron. So it is possible that the iron is not really in a pretty active state, like the amorphous phase of iron maybe not high compared with alumina. So that's probably why the phosphorus swapped to aluminum hydroxide instead of iron. Any more questions?
There's plenty of time to grab speakers right now in the break. So.
Thank you.